I'm Robert Siegel, and this hour we'll be hearing excerpts from the Intelligence Squared U.S. debate that I moderated at Asia Society in New York City on the evening of April 15, 2008. This series of debates is sponsored by the Rosenkranz Foundation, and the proposition this time is Islam is dominated by radicals. The entry poll recorded the audience as for the motion. 46% voted in favor, while only 32% were against, and 22% were undecided. After the debate, they will vote again to see if the debaters were able to sway the audience with their arguments. Well, now we'll begin by hearing a sampling of a few of the ideas presented in the opening statements. The first speaker of the night is Paul Marshall. He's senior fellow at the Center for Religious Freedom at the Hudson Institute.
Okay, thank you very much for inviting us all this evening, and thank you for being here. We, in favor of this motion, argue that Islam is dominated by radicals. What do we mean by radicals? We mean those who are striving for a political order representing a reactionary version of Islam that denies legal and civic equality to men and women, and also denies it on the basis of religion. It also denies freedom of speech and freedom of thought. We believe such trends, such people, currently dominate world Islam. We are not arguing that Islam itself is inherently radical. Like any other movements, Islam takes different forms at different times. Also, we are not arguing that most Muslims are radical. Most are not. But what we are saying is it is the radicals who have their hands on the levers of power. They are, to pick a word, the hegemonic. They're tending to set the direction and shaping the future of Islam in the modern world. They do this not because they have superior numbers, but because they are extremely focused in what they want. They're clear about it. They are often well organized. They're often very well funded, often by Saudi Arabia. And they are very, very committed, being quite willing to often kill themselves and to kill other people, especially Muslims. So this is what...
That was Paul Marshall, and next we'll hear some excerpts from Reza Aslan's opening statement. He's the author of No God But God, The Origins, Evolution, and Future of Islam. And he's speaking against the motion Islam is dominated by radicals.
There is something peculiar about the way that this debate tonight is being worded. The idea that we could, from our comfortable perches here in Manhattan, pass judgment on the beliefs and practices of 1.5 billion people in every corner of the world. We're not here to talk about whether Saudi Arabia or Iran is dominated by radicals. We're here to talk about whether Islam is dominated by radicals. So I suppose it's not surprising that a large percentage of people in this room would believe that Islam is dominated by radicals. After all, no field work or research is necessary to come to such a conclusion. Just turn on your television, watch your nightly news. Now, of course, we're not children in this room. We all recognize that the purpose of commercial news is to sell commercials. And what sells commercials, of course, is violence and terror. You all know this. So then, if there are violent protests against deliberately provocative cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad in a Danish newspaper, that's a story. However, if a racist politician in the Netherlands makes a movie comparing the Quran to Mein Kampf and requesting its abolishment in the entire country, and no protests erupt, the lack of protests is not a story. There is simply no story. Similarly, if the Pope makes some controversial comments about the Prophet Muhammad and there are mass protests on the street, that's a story. If the Pope goes to Turkey and no mass protests erupt, it's not that the lack of protests is a story. There is no story.
And I can tell you, Reza Aslan continued by citing recent Gallup poll results.
A mere 7% of the world's Muslims believe that the attacks of 9/11 were justified. Now, more interestingly, Gallup went a little bit further and actually asked those 7% why they believed the attacks were justified. And the responses fly in the face of conventional wisdom. Not a single respondent in Indonesia cited the Quran as justification for the attacks of 9/11. Indeed, 74% of Indonesians, 86% of Pakistanis, 81% of Bangladeshis, and 80% of Iranians said that attacks against civilians were, quote, never justified, never. Now, please compare that to 46% of Americans who said the same. In fact, the Gallup poll found that in all Muslim countries, the majority of those Muslims who, quote unquote, support violence do so for markedly secular, that is, political, reasons. Robert Pape found similar tendencies in his comprehensive study of suicide bombing. He found that 95% of all suicide terrorism is, quote, not driven by religion as much as by clear strategic, read political, objectives.
That was Reza Aslan, and now we'll hear from the second speaker for the motion, Islam is Dominated by Radicals, Asra Nomani. She's the author of Standing Alone, An American Woman's Struggle for the Soul of Islam.
I have known, since the exportation of Wahhabism from Saudi Arabia to the far reaches of our Muslim world, I know that our community is dominated by radical ideology. I know that it is an ideology that has taken root in countries from Pakistan to states in Nigeria with laws that put women in second-class status, that give women criminal punishments because of sexual crimes. In each instance, you could say that there's a political purpose, but at the end of the day, it is done in the name of Islam. I don't stand up here and condemn my faith. I fight for it every single day. I fight for a progressive interpretation of our faith. But at the end of the day, our religion, our institutional Islam, out there in the world, we are controlled and dominated by radical ideology. Two-thirds of mosques in America versus half in the 1990s have women separated. And you could argue that that's not radical ideology, but it is part of a continuum of an interpretation of Islam that takes a literal read that says a woman is sexual temptation. You take that interpretation, and it isn't that long that you have to also add up to an interpretation that says that you can't be friends with the Jews and the Christians, that violence is acceptable. Why do I know this? Because I've heard it from my pulpit. I've heard it from the sermons that are downloaded on college campuses across this country and across the world. When we put women, half of our population in particular, in second-class status around the world, you can call it anything you want, but I consider it unacceptable, and I call it radical ideology. It's unacceptable to have tradition become religion with female genital mutilation. It's unacceptable to have honor killings as we are from Canada to Texas to Turkey. You can call those anecdotes, but it's a trend. It's a trend that's happening because our Islam of today is dominated by radicals. We don't have mosque leaders who are keeping that kind of ideology in check. We need to not cower in the face of political correctness. A lot of you may have hesitation because you think that if you vote for the motion, you're voting and condemning Islam. I don't stand here before you saying that that is at all on the table. We can stand up for religion that is not dominated by radicals, but we can accept the fact when it is. And in our day, in the trenches, in the Muslim world, the leadership is one that accepts radical ideology, and the moderates don't stand up against it. So I encourage you to vote for the motion and understand that it's a vote for truth. Thank you.
That was Asra Nomani. Next, speaking against the motion, we'll hear from Edina Lekovic. She's communications director for the Muslim Public Affairs Council.
Saying that Islam is dominated by radicals is as absurd as saying that America is dominated by murderers. Certainly, they exist within our society. And certainly, radicals exist within the fold of Islam. But do they dominate? Absolutely not. Based on the polling data that Reza shared with you, and based on so much other data that exists out there, the people on the Muslim streets are striving for freedom of speech, for democracy, for technology, for those very things that they admire the West for. That is what their faith is pushing them to do. To point to Saudi Arabia over and over again, I will hand that to the other side. Saudi Arabia is by no means the shining glory of any part of the Muslim world. But pointing to pockets in no way reflects the overall reality. Looking in a pocket, or in many pockets, in no way represents the overall costume, the overall character of the people. And it is the people who define the faith and who define their global community. Radicals are failing in their attempt to dominate. Those who make up Al-Qaeda are on the run. Their messages are not reaching the audiences that they seek to convert and to brainwash as much as they used to. And that, to me, is an important symbol of the rise of moderation, the rise of the middle, the rise of those who dominate this faith. Even those in Al-Qaeda, Ayman Zawahiri, who recently released a tape, they have had to change their tactics because they are receiving criticism from within the Muslim community. They have had to respond to criticism about targeting civilians and have had to answer these questions to the very people that they are trying to recruit. Just look at what Muslim scholars and Muslim leaders have been able to achieve in the last few years. In 2005, Jordan's King Abdullah convened an international Islamic conference of 200 of the world's most leading Islamic scholars from 50 different countries. They forbade the declaration of apostasy between Muslims, and they further provided preconditions to issuing fatwas. Internationally recognized leaders are calling for integration, for tolerance, and for advancement, and their reach is 10 times wider at least than that of Al-Qaeda or any of their associates. Just consider.
These are excerpts from a live Intelligence Squared debate. To open the discussion period, I asked a question of Paul Marshall, and in this passage, we'll hear for the first time from David Gartenstein Ross. He's vice president of research at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and he's in favor of the motion.
Quickly, first for Paul Marshall, if, as you argue, Islam is dominated by radicals, why aren't Indonesia, Malaysia, Bangladesh, or for that matter, tens of millions of Muslims in India all knuckling under to jihadist movements? Why haven't we seen more Islamic revolutions?
Because most Muslims don't like the radicals' agenda.
They're not dominated
precisely.
By it.
Well, no, I think if people have guns, if they intimidate people, if they're organized, if they have funding, if one sees the increase in radical movements, radical imams, when you see in Indonesia the destruction of hundreds of churches, where 10 years ago in Indonesia, 20 years ago, you would never have seen that. People coexisted. So even in places like Indonesia, in places like Bangladesh, in places like Malaysia, even though most of the people don't want it, you have the growth of radical movements, and they often win because they intimidate and scare other
people. Marshall.
Okay, more.
Paul Marshall knows that those churches are primarily Chinese-owned.
And you well know that Lashkar Jihad does not justify its attacks that way.
It justified
a general religious war against Christians.
They do not dominate either the discussion about Islam in Indonesia or the society of Indonesia or the government. There's one country in the world.
I agree with you and Adina that they don't dominate the discussions, the conferences, but those don't have much effect.
No,
The people with guns beat the people with professors every time. They dominate
actions. What I thought was really interesting was that, Adina, you even talked about the moderates reemerging as the dominant force in the faith, an acknowledgement that they are not the dominant force.
I want to hear Adina answer the question from Asra Namani.
Talk is great to point out. This is not a popularity contest of what Muslims mostly think. When we talk about whether Islam is dominated by radicals, domination to me is, do they have leadership in our communities? And are they taking action that is representative of a violent strain of Islam? And I'd say yes.
Asra Namani, thanks. And Adina Lekovic. Well, let me ask you a specific question,
sure.
By the way. You spoke of Saudi Arabia mm-hmm. as a pocket that we shouldn't take as representative any more than murderers in America should be representative of American life. Wouldn't you concede that the role of Saudi Arabia, and Iran for that matter, on the global stage is far disproportionate to their mere numerical position in Islam? They have influence beyond their own borders.
Absolutely, right? But let's consider also where that comes from. Let's consider the kind of U.S. support that Saudi Arabia also gets in reciprocity. But now, in no way do I place any sort of validity or endorsement on the Saudi ideology. That in no way represents the global reality of Islam. We have to recognize and reinforce the majority. And that's precisely what has happened since 9/11, which is the point that I was trying to make. That's where the reemergence is taking place.
Now, we'll continue with excerpts from the two remaining opening statements. Here's David Gartenstein-Ross arguing for the motion, Islam is dominated by radicals, and here he's talking about a poll conducted by the British think tank, Policy Exchange.
One recent poll shows that a shocking 36% of British Muslims between the ages of 16 and 24 said that someone who converts from Islam to another faith should be punished by death. That's within the West. You get a 36% support for this. Now, 36% obviously is not a majority, but what it shows is the hegemony of radicals, the fact that these ideas are seeping even into the West, where people are familiar with Western customs, Western freedoms, and have had a chance to live in them. A recent poll conducted by Pew found that 15% of Indonesians believe that violence in defense of Islam is justified. Well, 15% isn't a whole lot, but when you look at Indonesia, which is the world's most populous Muslim country, you're talking about 25 million people. I find that number to be a bit disturbing, and it's out of line with what you'd find comparably Christians saying in terms of whether violence is justified in terms of defense of Christianity. Now, that is relevant to assessing whether this resolution is correct. And Adina actually gives up the game in her speech because she concedes that Saudi Arabia is radical. Saudi Arabia today is the biggest country in terms of propagating a view of Islam. If you look at countries from Bosnia to Indonesia to Somalia, countries that for a long time had a very moderate practice of Islam, as Saudi money has gone in there, the practice of Islam has fundamentally shifted. Things are not going to get better on their own because look at the price of oil. Saudi Arabia is the world's biggest exporter of oil, in addition to being the world's biggest exporter of radical ideology. And the price of oil is skyrocketing. And with this power, with this oil money, you'll see these radical ideas continue to take shape. Saudi Arabia is a powerful country. In conceding that Saudi Arabia is radical, they fundamentally concede that this debate is not about al-Qaeda. It's about the radical institutions. And those radical institutions are indeed taking root. Look at what the Organization of the Islamic Conference did, the OIC. In response to the Danish cartoons, they pushed for a ban in the UN. They said that there should be a new law to prevent cartoons like that coming up ever again. These are cartoons that were published in the West. And the Islamic countries believe that it's their right to make sure that the West alters its precept of free speech to conform with norms that would be more suitable. That is why we're saying that radicals have hegemonic power, and that's why you should vote for this resolution.
That was David Gartenstein-Ross. The last opening statement comes from Richard Bullitt. He's a professor of history at Columbia University, and he is against the motion.
The proposition is that radicals dominate Islam. Now we've heard other words like hegemony. After all, 36% of British Muslims think that apostasy deserves death, and that's hegemony. Well, not by my count. 36% is 36%. You want a majority if you want hegemony. The fact that in Britain, virtually all of the Muslims come from one particular, rather benighted part of Pakistan and do not in any way, by any measure, represent a cross-section of the Muslim world should also be taken into account. What has not been talked about here is the fact that most of the countries in the Muslim world are not governed by Muslim regimes. They're governed by autocratic dictatorships. Most of the political activity of Muslims that gives rise to strong political statements has to do with opposing, living under totalitarianism. Most of the people in the Muslim world have not, nor did their parents, nor will their grandchildren, in all likelihood, had any opportunity to participate in or choose the governments under what they live. Now, the fact of the matter is that when they object to autocratic rule, two things happen. One is that they fall back on their religious faith and say, well, Islam can help us against this autocracy. The second one is they say, who is supporting the dictatorships that we live in? Lo and behold, I say it's the United States. So that when you have Muslims objecting to U.S. policies, it's more frequently that they are objecting to the support the United States gives to autocratic rule, whether it is in Egypt, Saudi Arabia, or in Pakistan. This is the crux of the matter in the Muslim world. What it's about is a billion people, two-thirds of whom do not live in democratic systems, and who are looking to their tradition and their faith tradition to try to work for a better life and a more participatory role in the polities that they live in. And they find that...
Next, we'll hear a question that I asked Richard Bullitt.
Would you agree or disagree with the statement that Muslim clergy worldwide is dominated by people who would want to see Islamic law imposed in their societies and would prefer to live in a society under Islamic law? Do you think it's true or false, or no way of knowing?
Oh, I think that's false. I held a conference a number of years ago exclusively devoted to Muslim political activists. You know, I held it in Amman, Jordan. And one of the issues that we were supposed to discuss was the idea of an Islamic Republic. There wasn't a single person there.
There were Muslim political activists?
Yes, they were. They were from the Muslim Brotherhood. They were from the Dawah Party. They were from the Skiri Party. They were from a whole series of Muslim political parties in the Middle East. And none of them supported the idea of an Islamic Republic.
And you believe that from a group whose message was the Quran is
David
our constitution?
Gartenstein-Ros.
The Muslim Brotherhood is very clear on what their goals are. Hassan al-Banna talked about this, Sayyid Qutb talked about
the
first Islamic state. And their motto remains, the Quran is our constitution.
You're mistaking the 1930s or the 1950s with the Muslim Brotherhood today. The Muslim Brotherhood today
Muhammad
talks about pluralism primarily.
These are excerpts of a live Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. And now we'll hear a section of the debate in which the speakers question their opponents. We'll begin with Paul Marshall. He is for the motion, Islam is dominated by radicals.
Professor Bullitt, you opposed our use of the word hegemony and said when, say, 30% or so of British Muslim youth want to kill someone who rejects Islam or believes they should be killed, you said that's not a majority. Hegemony equals a majority. But would you not agree that in the regimes we're talking about, if one is talking about Egypt or Saudi Arabia or a vast number of other countries, the majority of the people may oppose something, but surely you would agree that currently the Saudi Arabian government is hegemonic, the Iranian government is hegemonic in terms of what shapes that country?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, yes, I mean... the British government isn't, however, in that category. If you are going to say that the government in any autocratic state, whether it is Saudi Arabia or Iran or Egypt or Tunisia or any of the other myriad autocratic states that the government calls the shots, yeah, the government does call the shots, and therefore you could say that the government has a dominating or hegemonic role. But if you want to go down that route, then you find that most Muslims in the world aren't living in those states that you're worried about. They're living in states that are governed by nationalist, secular, or also self-proclaimed secular autocracies. So, you know, you can't just single out Saudi Arabia and Iran and say, this is the whole of the law and the prophets. It just doesn't work that way.
That was Richard Bullitt, and now we'll hear Asra Nomani, who is for the motion, questioning Adina Lekovic.
Well, Adina said earlier that to suggest that radicals dominate, as is our proposition there, Islam is like saying that murderers define America. So 22 countries are the number of countries that declare that Islam is the state religion. Of those, 14 say that conversion of Islam is illegal. The good professor suggested that, in fact, we are correct that Islamic law in Saudi Arabia and all of these other countries suggest inequity. So my question to you, thank you, is the laws are defined by ideology that represents inequity. Most of the countries are governed by Islamic states in the name of Islam. How do you then argue that the excuse is autocracies, that the equivalent is that as if murderers were running America?
These countries are not, the leadership does not even proclaim to be running the country in the name of Islam. Again,
well,
when
they have Islam as their state religion,
is it my
and they
turn
have
to answer?
Islamic law.
The Islamic law has been on the books for a period of time in these countries. The leaders who are coming into the leadership are dictators who are following upon the heels of dictators and who are supported by, you know, international forces. The fact that these laws exist on the books are indeed still problematic. No one on our side is denying any of that. These realities certainly exist on the ground. However, we have to look at where they are enforced and when they are enforced. Because even where Islamic law, we try to take Sharia and turn it into as if it's the Sharia, that it's a one-size-fits-all Sharia that exists in all of these countries, nothing could be further from the truth. In some of these countries, even those rules around apostasy have long been unenforced. We have to look at where this rise has come from. And a lot of it, in my mind, is a very reactionary action that has taken place. I do not know why we are once again, over and over again, denying the realities of the people on the ground who make up the dominant force within Islam.
And here is Adina Lekovich once again. She is against the motion, Islam is dominated by radicals, and she has a question for Paul Marshall.
Last week, General Petraeus testified before Congress and said that the Iraqi people are turning on al-Qaeda, and that they are fighting them, and that this is resulting in a reduced presence of al-Qaeda in Iraq. And we see this as a rare glimpse of success in our war policy. And pundits and scholars, including journalists who have been on the ground in some of the very countries that we are talking about, have also said that al-Qaeda being the prime example, but other radical groups on the ground, that their influence is also declining. Do you dispute that fact?
Okay. I wouldn't have enough knowledge of on the ground in Iraq to dispute that. It may well be the case that sort of more radical forces, not just the al-Qaeda types, but the Mahdi army and these other groups, that the Iraqis are sort of getting fed up with them and resisting them. This may well be the case. But it would not, for me, make a difference in terms of my overall view of dominant trends in the Muslim world in Africa, South Asia, Southeast Asia, and so forth.
That was Paul Marshall. Here is David Gartenstein-Ross, who is for the motion, asking a question of Reza Aslan.
I'm interested, actually, in your answer. You talked about the polls on violence during your first speech. My question is, first of all, do you still find the raw numbers disturbing? I talked a bit about the study on Indonesia. 15% equates to 25 million people who support violence in the name of the religion. And then second, do you find it disturbing, regardless of whether they name religion as one of their motivating factors for it?
Actually, what you said was 15% of Indonesians would resort to violence in defense of their religion. I can't believe it's as little as 15%. I would be shocked if it were less than 50%. Religion in every culture, including ours, is not just beliefs and practices, it's identity. And if someone were coming to my country to attack me, attack my identity, you damn right I would resort to violence to deflect that attack. Now,
but pugilistically, please, when Andres Serrano's Piss Christ came out, Christians weren't rioting on the streets, whereas with the Danish cartoons, you had over 100 people killed throughout the world.
Yeah, actually, Nigerian Christians were massacring with machetes Muslims, just as Muslims were massacring Christians. But let me just say, it may be right that you're not going to get similar numbers of Christians if you ask, let's say, Americans, but ask that question of Guatemalans. Ask that question of people in San Salvador, and I think you're going to get a different answer. The reason that there are so many few Americans who feel that way is because, I mean, saying that my religion is under attack because I can't pray in my classroom is not being under attack.
As opposed to there being cartoons ridiculing your religion?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah.
As a matter of fact, so you do think that it's okay to riot in response to, you think that that's okay?
I think it's perfectly okay to protest those cartoons.
And to kill people?
No,
over
violence.
100 people died.
No, but that's different. What you're saying is, you know, should I act in defense of my religion?
To commit acts of violence, it's not act in defense of your religion.
Should I act
violently? It's commit acts of violence. That's what the survey
said. Should I act violently in defense of my religion? Absolutely. If what that means is that it's my identity, that people are on the ground attacking me.
And this, folks, shows why Islam is dominated by radicals.
It's sort of... No. It's a very...
No.
The last applause line.
It's a very superficial and unsophisticated view of religion to think that what we're talking about here is if someone is offended by, you know, something about their religion,
so the people who died should yield to the fact that they're unsophisticated in their knowledge that they died.
Would you resort to violence to defend your religion? I guarantee you that the people in Indonesia who answer that question were not talking about being offended. Around the world, the majority view is that the war on terror is a war against Muslim identity. This
on
is
that
a
note,
very real issue.
I think
so.
These are excerpts of a live Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. We'll now continue with Richard Bullitt, who is against the motion, Islam is dominated by radicals. He is questioning something that he heard in David Gartenstein Ross's opening statement.
You finished your talk with what struck me as an absolute absurdity, namely that the price of oil is somehow equatable to the dominance of radical Islam. And it made me think, gee, if we can only solve our energy problem, will radical Islam go away? I think it's an absurdity.
Well, okay, the way you frame it is, but that's not what I said. Saudi charities, Saudi institutions, Saudi imams make a difference throughout the world. And the reason why they're so widespread is indeed because Saudi Arabia has a lot of money to spend due to its oil revenues. The point I was making was simply that oil revenues aren't going to dry up anytime soon. Rather, the price of oil is skyrocketing. And as a result, these institutions are out there far more than they were before. That goes to the point of hegemony.
But you haven't demonstrated that the efforts the Saudis are making are actually succeeding. All you've done is saying that they're doing it.
But look at Somalia, where you have a war racking the country, where the group formerly known as the Islamic Courts Union, now known as the Alliance for Reliberation of Somalia, managed to conquer the country, impose Islamic law in which people were arrested for watching Pretty in Pink, in which a karate instructor who had female students was arrested, where people were shot for watching the World Cup. That stuff was unheard of in Somalia 30 years ago. And today, that is the reality on the ground. So I can say for a fact that, yes, this oil money and this dawah is making a difference, and it's making a difference in a way that affects people's lives.
Okay. That's David Gartenstein Ross. And before we get to the closing statements, we'll hear a few questions from the audience.
Have the political changes in Iraq over the past 5 years strengthened or weakened the domination of Islam by radicals?
This is David Gartenstein Ross. You want to answer that?
Okay, sure. I think that the changes in Iraq have had both effects. On the one hand, I think the Iraq War has clearly been a rallying point for radicals, and whether that's justifiable or unjustifiable is something that people can decide on their own. But clearly, it's been a great recruiting ground for al-Qaeda and others. The flip side of that is the anti-jihadist movements that are there, things like the Sahwa movement, and those have had a cognizably good impact. I think on the whole, the fighting there is something that is energizing of radicals in the Muslim world without a question, and that's not going to stop regardless of the Sahwa movement.
Where is our next question coming from? On the right.
First of all, I think this has been addressed on pretty much one level. Islam is dominated by radicals, has a multitude of meanings, not just political. And I don't know, obviously, I'm not an expert on the Muslim religion, but I do know several women in New York who go to mosques and are placed in separate areas, who cannot go out with a man or be seen with a man without a chaperone, and any union has to be validated by the head of the mosque. My question is to Adina. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the absolute bare-bones questions of human rights in that issue?
Bare-bones questions of human rights. Well, you said something about the union of marriages. In any church, the union of two people must be sanctified by that religious institution. On the question of chaperones, it in many ways is a product of culture than of religion. There is what has been practiced by my family for generations is what is then being practiced. I think this question of religion and culture and the weaving of the two is one of the central questions that we face within the global Muslim community today.
The reality is that Islam looks and feels and tastes different no matter where you go. Is there a very real problem when it comes to the treatment of women in mosques and in human rights issues? Absolutely. Is it the dominant force for Muslim women and their lives? I would argue with that point. There are just as many women who are, when they have an education, when they have, you know, when they have access, and that's, again, we have dividing lines. We can't separate the question of human rights when there is a lack of education, where there is poverty, where there are these surrounding issues. It is not simply a matter of religious teachings, because you have the Benazir Bhuttos, you have the women heads of state in Bangladesh and Pakistan and Indonesia and other places. You have these other examples that exist out there, and they are just as much role models for Muslim women as are the problems that they are facing. These are two sides of the same reality, but absolutely, there's a very real problem on the ground, and it's one that is being faced by NGOs, by civil society groups, and by women themselves on the ground. And that's what I'm really trying to put the attention on here, is that there is an active fight taking place on the ground, an active fight.
And there has to be a fight, because there has to be a fight. I want to just make the point
Asra Nomani.
Again. There has to be a fight because the leadership is dominated by radicalism.
And by patriarchy.
Yes, patriarchy is a form of radicalism.
As it is in other parts of the non-Muslim world.
Right, but unfortunately, our Muslim society is defined right now by a patriarchy that the Christian and Jewish societies have evolved beyond.
You're confused.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't just get censored in Dubai because I wanted to talk about women's rights. Oh, I'm sorry. The mosque up the street didn't tell me that I couldn't pray in the main hall because that's not what a woman's supposed to do. Oh, I'm sorry. Those men that surrounded me.
Orthodox synagogues.
Excuse me.
Separate.
Orthodox synagogues are a
Catholic churches,
excuse
women
me?
Can't become priests, they can't serve,
of,
you know.
They're a portion of the Jewish community, but at the end of the
day, patriarchy is everywhere.
Orthodox ideology is what defines our communities. Two out of three mosques in America do not even allow a woman on the board. That is a statistic. And that
from where?
Is,
whose
that
statistic is that? It's very easy
council,
to throw these things
council,
out there.
Council on American Islamic Relations, who are consider themselves the NAACP of the Muslim world fighting for women's rights. I mean, this is the reality. We can talk politics. We can talk all sorts of, you know, dictatorships. Ultimately, we're dealing with bullies in the community who want to push their radical ideology.
Asra Nomani, though, it would be one could infer from what you've said that at the start of the last century, that all of Western civilization was dominated by extremists.
And have we not gotten at least some movement where we have churches now, where we have women as priests, where we have Catholic women
and
who are
still
fighting for the
They
protest.
Are fighting.
We have mosques
they
where
have,
women are imams.
Oh,
so,
really?
I mean,
very
I'd
small percentage.
To go to them in China, in some rural areas. Oh, I'll take a trip there.
No,
but
no,
I don't
in the United
think,
States.
Oh, really, Reza? Tell me where I could go.
Absolutely. The Zaytuna Institute, the mm-hmm. only seminary
right.
in the United States,
right.
trains as many women
right.
imams as
women
it
imams
as it trains
to teach
male
the
imams.
Women, you know, because they're acceptable for the sisters. But at the end of the day, they're not good enough for the men.
Another
and that, to me, is unacceptable.
Another question from the audience.
So according to a 2007 Pew study, over 60% of Muslims in America identified as moderate. So I was hoping that Asra can elaborate a little bit on it. Why is Islam dominated by radicals?
Because, Asra Nomani.
Like I've said before, I mean, this is not a conversation about the majority of Muslims. We're talking about whether Islam is dominated. Dominated to me means institutional Islam. It means the people who are running our mosques, running our organizations. It means this establishment that I call Wahhabism Incorporated that is basically not just, you know, a pocket, an empty anecdote. It is an empire out there in the world that is defining our community. This isn't a popularity contest about whether we want moderate expression of Islam or not. This is about who's running our communities. And I can tell you that institutional Islam is representing a radical ideology that may not represent what most of Muslims believe, but at the end of the day, it's not worth the trouble for most Muslims to battle them. I can tell you from the trenches, the struggle to battle that kind of institutional Islam is painful. You lose status, you get death threats, you get all sorts of abuse. And this is what happens whenever you challenge the authorities. And right now, the authorities represent radical Islam.
This is an IQ Squared U.S. debate on the proposition Islam is dominated by radicals. We'll now hear excerpts of some of the closing statements. Each speaker has exactly 2 minutes, and they alternate between the two sides. First, speaking against the motion, here's Reza Aslan.
I guess the question has to be, once again, what exactly are these radicals dominating? Asra Nomani has said that they're dominating action. That is demonstrably false, because that would mean that what we're seeing in every country in the Muslim world is this radical collective action, which of course takes part in political violence, in terrorism, which is simply not true. I mean, that's demonstrably false. That is not the majority of the actions that we're seeing. Paul Marshall has said that it is the states that Islam is or radical are dominating. That again is demonstrably false. Besides the fact that, you know, one-third of the Muslim world lives in democracy, besides the fact that of the most populous Muslim countries in the world, Turkey, Malaysia, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Lebanon, Senegal, these are all quite successful democratic states, and that in those countries that we do see a real sort of movement of political, one could even say radical Islam, they're all in response to secular autocracies in which the mosque is the only free space in society and the only opposition is religious opposition. David has said it's the institutions that Muslims are radicalizing. This, again, is demonstrably false. The Iman Declaration, 170 of the world's leading clerics and scholars representing every single sect and schism of Islam came together, issued fatwas outlawing violence in the name of Islam, outlawing calling anyone a takfir or an apostate. The same thing happened in the Mecca Declaration a year after that. The same thing happened just earlier in this year with the King of Jordan. So in every single one of these issues, the idea that something is being dominated is demonstrably false. So we can talk about our sort of visions about what Islam brings up, you know, the visions of warfare and them. But the fact is, when you think about it in its historical sense, in its factual, objectifiable, observifiable sense, it just doesn't make any sense.
Thank you, Reza Aslan, for your closing statement. Paul Marshall, arguing in favor of the motion.
Okay. Yes, we do argue it is the question of institutions, who is controlling organizations. Of course, one of those major and most powerful of those organizations is states, though not just them. Compared the situation of 30 years ago, with a radical Islamic regime, you basically just had the Saudis, at least a large one. Then you had Iran. Then you've had Sudan. Then you've had radicalization in Pakistan, which has continued. You've had events in Somalia. You've had events in Nigeria. If you look at places where more radical movements are not per se the government, but are increasingly influencing it and are more powerful and establish themselves as the opposition, we see this in Egypt. We see this in Algeria. We see this in Malaysia. We see this in Indonesia. And in each of those countries, we see an increase of violence. So in each of these settings, compare the situation 20 years ago and the situation now. If you look at movements amongst Muslims, say amongst the Palestinians, amongst the Chechens, around Kashmir, in the Philippines, in Thailand, in Lebanon, you've had movements there opposing the government. Usually it was in terms of national liberation or political freedom or access to resources. Now in each of those, a shift towards a more radical Islamic emphasis. We see this across the board in setting after setting. It is now more radical than it was then. Of course, there's a pushback from Jordan. I've been involved in some of these conferences, similarly with Turkey, similarly with Morocco, with Indonesian organizations. But they cannot mask so far, I hope they will, but so far they cannot mask the power, the resources which are arrayed against them. Currently, in the war of ideas within the Muslim world, the radicals are winning.
Paul Marshall. And now a closing statement from Edina Lekovic.
In the war of ideas, the moderates are the ones who have regained the ground since 9/11, both in internationally recognized leaders and in the feelings and the sentiments of the people on the ground. And it is those people on the ground, 1.3 billion of them, who dominate and define the religion of Islam. As do their recognized religious leaders who are, as we mentioned time and again, pushing for a new form of tolerance and more and greater dialogue with other religious institutions as well as state powers. Let us not confuse Islamic states, two-thirds of them, that are dictatorships. The argument on the table is not whether the Muslim world is ruled by dictatorships. It most certainly is. But that is not the question on the table. The question is whether Islam itself, and therefore the global population of Muslims, are dominated by radicals. Radicals are failing in their attempt to dominate. The moral bankruptcy of the militants, as well as their abject failure in socioeconomic terms, has strengthened the leaders of moderate, predominantly Muslim nations, just like Turkey, like Indonesia, like Malaysia, in their struggle against religious radicalism and backwardness. Let us remember again the people on the ground who make up the dominant force within Islam and who have wrestled back control over their faith and are continuing to do so. Are they the 100% at this point? Absolutely not. But they make up the dominant side, and they say, according to Gallup, that the most important thing that Westerners can do to improve relations with their societies is to change their negative views toward Islam and respect Muslims and Islam.
Thank you, Adina Lekovic, for that closing statement against the motion. Now with a closing statement for the motion, Islam is dominated by radicals, is Asra Nomani.
Regained the ground, wrestled back our communities? I don't think so. A Christian or Jew cannot go into Mecca because you're banned. A woman cannot travel to Mecca because of the laws of the land that say that she has to have a chaperone. The men in our community have decided that, in fact, their radical version of the ideology allows them to retain power. You can call it an autocracy, you can call it dictatorships, you can call it anything you want, but it is radical and it is dominating our communities. Just look at the example of the South in the 1930s, let's say. Civil rights. Let's exchange the words of our proposition. The South was dominated by white supremacists at that time. Would they have been the majority? Maybe not. But they controlled the churches, they controlled the cops, they controlled the laws, they controlled the power structure. That's what we're talking about. Our laws, our power structure, our cops, our clerics are all on the payroll of an ideology that is radical. And it's an issue of great pain to me as a Muslim. It's an issue of great sadness. It breaks my heart that this is the reality and the truth, and it's an ugly truth. But I challenge you to accept it, because even though it's ugly, it's only when we're honest about it that we're actually going to be able to change the world so that this reality where Muslims regain the ground and take back our communities will actually happen one day. It hasn't happened yet, and I can only hope that it will happen. But right now, we have not won the war, and the struggle continues. And I assure you that we are in the struggle.
And that concludes our debate. When the audience had finished voting on the proposition Islam is dominated by radicals, the side for the motion had increased its lead in the polls considerably. They were ahead in the entry poll by 46% to 32%, but at the end of the evening, the results were 73% for the motion and only 23% against. 4% were still undecided. To hear the full unedited version of this or other debates in the IQ Squared series, or to subscribe to our podcast, visit npr.org/intelligencesquared. The Intelligence Squared U.S. debate series is an initiative of the Rosenkranz Foundation, Chairman Robert Rosenkranz, Executive Producer Dana Wolf. For more information about this series or to find out how you can get tickets to future live events, visit www.iq2us.org. That's IQ, the numeral 2, US.org. The goal of Intelligence Squared U.S. is to raise the level of public discourse in American life and to recognize that on most contentious issues, both sides have intellectually respectable views. This series is produced for radio by WNYC in New York, producer Rob Christensen, executive producer Ellen Horn. The recording was engineered by Damon Whittemore, Edward Haber, and M.A. Braun. Intelligence Squared U.S. is distributed by NPR.
National Public Radio.